Here we are, Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Geer, and we are on KX93.5 FM. We're also simulcast live online at KX93.5.com. This is Laguna's only FM station, Human Crafted Radio. And it's also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. They have a variety of great treatment programs from addiction to mental health. And programs catering to professionals, all sorts of people. So thank you for KX93.5 for making the show possible and New Vista Behavioral Health. So, as I said, I'm your host, Wes Geer. You can call me Wes. You can call me Wesley. Hey, dude. Any of that works. So why are we here? Weirdly enough, I felt like I was supposed to be on the radio. I didn't really want to be on the radio. And somehow I came in the station promoting one of our Rock to Recovery concerts. And they're like, we want to have a recovery show. And I said, that's kind of weird. I felt like I was supposed to be on the radio. And next thing you know, I'm on the radio. Hopefully I don't suck. But why are we here? We're here because, I mean, this is a real deal we got going on. So many people dying from, you know, mental health issues, addiction, wounded warriors, PTSD, TBI, traumas. You know, a lot of people that suffer horrible traumas when they're young or in life, you know, turn suicidal as well. The issue is, though, when we're in those scenarios, we get very lonely and isolated. There's something we call feeling terminally unique, like nobody gets it. Nobody's like me. Nobody has it like this. Nobody's as addicted as I am. Nobody's been as hurt as me. Nobody's gone through this. And we die. We perish. We feel alone. So in this show, we can talk about this stuff. We can bring it out into the light, right? And the darkness dies by the light. And what we find out is when we're alone, we perish, and when we're together, when we're working together, when we're encouraging each other and sharing information and recovery programs, that's when we can overcome what's troubling us, what's trying to kill us, and not just survive, but what we find is these amazing stories of people thriving and get into what I call the vortex of radness, right? It's like, oh, it's so dark, it's never going to be good again. And then we recover and we hit this other, like, fourth dimension of existence where it's like, man, life is better than I ever imagined it could be. Who knew? So we interview some rock stars, some celebs, some actors. We had Miss USA on last week. We have just rad humans, exceptional earthlings. And, you know, we like to change it up. We've had people who are definitely not sober and still struggling. We've had wounded veterans who've done combat missions, you know, and dealt with that kind of trauma. And tonight we have a very special guest. I'm really excited to talk to him because it's something a little off the beaten path for us, but super cool nonetheless. So let me set this up after my 20-minute intro to the show. We have a gentleman who's known as a big wave surfer from Santa Cruz. He actually went to Santa Cruz High School and won Mavericks 3 times. Now, for you people out there that don't understand what Mavericks is, it is a big wave. It's a giant wave. It's ugly. It's dark green. There's like great whites hanging out there. I mean, it's up in, he's going to tell us in a second, like the Monterey area, like up north, right? This is a massive, gnarly wave. And this guy won this contest 3 times, surfing the wave. He's been in a few surf films, Riding Giants, Step into Liquid, Billabong Odyssey, a lot of stuff like that. And not only that, he's a recovering addict, and he has a program called Fleehab. So that kind of gives you a hint to his name. Not going to delay anymore. So on the line, we have Daryl Flea, if I don't mess this up, Verostko.
Silent T. I like it.
Okay, is that right? Verostko?
Yeah, Verostko, yep.
I think I tried to throw in the T, if I'm honest. I really did.
But yeah, anyway, it's all good. You got pretty close.
Yeah, man. How was the setup? Anything you want to add?
No, well, you know, Mavericks is in Half Moon Bay,
yep,
which is about 45 minutes north of Santa Cruz. And, yeah, you got everything right. I did go to Santa Cruz High.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Cool, man. So this is rad to have you on. Thank you for making the time. For those listening at home, we were, Daryl and I were joking offline that, oh, man, we're up late. We both kind of had long days. I was rocking out with the band. You were hanging with some your daughter, I guess.
Yeah. We got two little girls, 4 and 7, and it's epic.
It's epic, isn't it? And I was hanging with a bunch of little girls too, but they're dudes who play music. And I was telling you earlier, musicians are like little girls. Very similar.
Yeah, man.
Cool. So let's get into it. And we were talking offline a moment ago, kind of like how we do the flow is what it was like, you know, growing up or wherever we decided to start the story. And then what happened, you know, you did fall into addiction. You had some challenges. And then how you made it out and what you're doing now that's, you know, amazing, fulfilling, and rad. And we'll get into that. But for a lot of people, you know, the story can start very young. Some people it's a little later. Where would you say the story starts for you?
I would just say the story probably starts just growing up here in Santa Cruz, you know, and just tons of waves everywhere and just close friends and just kind of going nuts as, you know, teenagers to young adults. And, yeah, it just starts, you know, probably when I was in my, you know, early teen years, and then life just got nuts with surfing. And, you know, I basically started getting paid to surf in high school. And wow. From there, it was just basically, it was on. After that happened, it was just like, this is all I want to do the rest of my life. So we were just surfing and pushing each other with a group of my friends and, you know, surfing bigger and bigger waves as we got older. And, just doing what normal kids do, you know, going a little bit nuts on the weekends and stuff like that. And just having fun, really, you know. And, I look back on it now, like the whole addiction part of things. And, it was basically just starts like anyone else would, you know, and just gets gnarlier throughout the years. But, luckily I had surfing that helped me out, you know, for a number of years.
Yeah. So. Definitely a progressive disease, as they say, or addiction progresses, right? Usually doesn't stay the same. But prior to that, and I think it's interesting, and maybe you're right. Maybe it is normal. I thought it was normal, but in hindsight, I look back and I realize what I thought was normal really wasn't that normal, you know? Some people do partying can be a part of growing up, but like me doing bong hits with cocaine on them and going to drafting class as a sophomore probably wasn't that normal. Like for
yeah, no, totally.
How
we were super extreme. Like the stuff that like we were like at the lane and yelling at people. It's just a rough upbringing. Mm. Like it was pretty motley crew. Mm. A lot of us were, you know, came from broken homes and stuff like that, and we found each other, and so it was like our second family. So we had a lot of freedom growing up.
So, yeah,
just like you, you know.
Yeah. How? Tell me about home life. What was it like when you were growing up? How'd it feel?
Well, you know, my parents separated when I was pretty young, and my mom moved to Santa Cruz, and that's what really just ignited the whole surfing thing because I was just blocks away from the ocean.
How old was that?
I was like probably 8 when they split up, so I was pretty young.
Yeah, and where were you before mom went to Santa Cruz?
We're living up in Santa Cruz Mountains with my dad and my mom, and then they split up, and my dad stayed in the mountains, and we came to town, and we'd go, you know, back and forth every other weekend. We'd go see Pops and stuff like that, and, you know, all of my friends kind of lived in the neighborhood. So it was just, it was a perfect little mixing pot for talent, for surfing, for one. I don't think I would have got as far as I did if I didn't have my friends pushing me every single day, you know?
Yeah. And how was it going between the parents? Because I did that too, and I would get really sad, and I didn't know why. But when I would come home from visiting, my parents split up too when I was 5. when I would hang with Dad and then come back home to Mom, I'd get really sad, and I never figured out why, but now I know, obviously, why. Did you notice? Did you have any, like, sadness, or were you more angry because there was some hurt in there?
Yeah, it was sad. You know, he was a little bit aggro in when they were married, and I'm glad they split up because of that, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like, it was a scary time, you know, for a kid, you know?
Right.
But I would basically, we went over to Dad's house every other weekend. We'd go for a couple of days, and it was in the mountains, and he had motorbikes and pellet guns. And so I'd bring a friend, and we'd just kind of do a little different thing for a couple of days. It was kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
But I definitely missed Santa Cruz and surfing and stuff like that. I probably wanted to be here more.
Mm-hmm. So did you start surfing right when you got there at 8?
Well, basically, I started surfing with my dad when I was 4.
Oh, wow.
He taught us how to surf, so we had surfing since I was 4. But we would come down and surf here and there and stuff like that. So when Mom moved to town, it was like every single day after school, we were riding our bikes to the ocean.
You're obsessed, huh?
Yeah, we're just completely obsessed, surfing till dark and waking up before school and going surfing. And I mean, that's what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah, I was like that with guitar. I got like that with the ocean for a while and stuff, but guitar really did. But I get it where like every moment, spare moment, like, you know, I would get up early just so I could play guitar a little bit before school.
Yeah. So, and then it just got back, you know, surfing just kind of blew up in the 90s for Santa Cruz. We were doing a lot of aerial moves and different moves surfing, and photographers were getting photos, and we were getting all over the mag. And, you know, we were starting to get paid pretty good by then, too. So things were getting... My parents never said, like, you should go to college, because I was, like, doing pretty good, you know?
Mm. So
it was kind of like, choose your path.
So you're cruising, and what, like, when you're, like, let's say, junior high, smoking a little weed, drinking a little bit, and just ripping at surfing?
Yeah, we just basically, you know, surfing wasn't one of those things that we were drinking and really smoking weed while we did it, you know?
Mm.
We were just like on the weekends or whatever, we'd go get some wine coolers or whatever and you know, at night or whatever. And that's kind of how it started, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like it just got probably, the more money I started making, the more my addiction was kicking in, because I didn't really care, you know? I was like, I got plenty of money, you know what I mean? I wasn't trying to steal things to get drugs or anything like that. I always had plenty of money. So I was just like, let's go. You guys want to go to Vegas? Let's go. You know, like,
that's
just
cool.
Crazy stuff, you know? And,
how old were you when you first started getting paid?
Wow. We were in high school. I think in high school, I started making just out of high school, like $300 a month was my first like sponsor.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's, you know, This is cool. And then we started getting photos in mags and stuff like that. And it just got better and better and better. You know, until I started, once I started surfing Mavericks, I was like, oh my gosh, this is on. This is my calling, you know? And, you know, the contest came in 1999, and we were all invited to that. And after I won that contest, it was like the paychecks just like tripled, you know?
What was the first year that you won Mavericks?
99.
So by that time you're out of school, what, you're in your mid-20s?
Yeah, 26 or something like that, yeah. And, we're just surfing all the time, just going on trips around the world, doing contests, trying to get photos. That's one thing that was really cool about surfing is got to go every place in the world.
Yeah.
You know, from Africa to Australia to Japan to Indo, you know, yearly, just, you know, tons. So that was really cool, especially for a young kid, you know, and all of his friends that we get to go do these things together was pretty special.
Yeah, that's cool. So tell me about Mavericks. Like, it breaks when it's there's a big swell, obviously. You got to wait for a winter storm is usually when it peaks.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, we just we follow all the low pressures coming down from Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of see them coming and just follow them. And then, you know, if it holds together and it's big enough, then that's when Mavericks breaks. It really takes a huge, huge swell to break. Just coming, it comes out of deep water and hits that shelf, and it creates a wave, you know, that's just bigger than you'll see anywhere, really.
Yeah.
So we just started following that, and just every single time it broke, we were just on it.
And so how old were you the first time you jumped on it?
I was 20. I was 20 years old, actually, and I was actually, like, we were sitting around a shaping room, me and a couple of my friends, and we had taken, like, a half hit of acid.
Mm.
And we were like, and then all of a sudden we heard the buoys. It's big. We're going. And so next thing you know, I'm out at Mavericks on, you know,
a half hit
of acid as a 20-year-old kid.
Wow.
And I was like on it. I was like, I caught 10 waves. I was psyched, you know?
Yeah. And so you didn't, because, you know, you can go both ways on acid or something like that. You could trip out and have a bad one, or were you just like super in the zone?
Yeah. I think my friends were like on a bad one. I think a couple of my friends were on a bad one and they got caught inside. But I was just like laser focused on what I had to do. I wish that wasn't the way I was introduced to Mavericks.
Sure.
You know, but I'm not going to, that's the story. You know
that
what
is
I mean?
What it is.
That's,
yeah.
One thing about recovery, you know, it's like, I'm honest, completely honest about everything. And that's fine. You know, that's what life is all about. So.
Yeah. So you get out there, you don't get crushed inside like your friends, and you take out, you're on half a hit of acid. You take off on the first big wave. How big was it?
It's probably like, I would say 15 to 20 feet, you know, and then it was just bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, and I never had a problem, never wiped out, came in from that session going, I love that place, you know, that's where, and every time it broke, that's how I was, and, you know, I never took acid out there again.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things, like, it just, that was the beginning of, like, this lust for something, you know?
Did it ever freak you out, or was it always pretty easy? Do you think the first time experience, do you think because you crushed it the first time that after that you just had a comfort with it?
Oh, I felt comfortable. You know, I felt like I was surfing every single day, all day long.
Mm.
So I wasn't out of the water and not feeling like I was, you know, I was like sharp on my game. So I felt super confident out there at Mavericks, and I felt like I had a relationship with it, you know what I mean? And just a certain feeling, like I felt like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going on this wave, and, you know, I wasn't scared. Like, I'm not paddling for the wave and then kind of second guessing yourself. That was never my thing. It was like, if I'm going to paddle, I'm going.
You're charging.
You know what I mean? And if I eat it, then that's just, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's insane.
It was fun. It was super fun. And you know, it worked out.
It worked out. Worked out real good. So you're making money and you're traveling out around the world. Who were some of the people you were hanging with? I would guess, like, were you hanging with guys like Christian Fletcher, or who were some of your people?
No, I knew Christian Fletcher. We did the air contest together, you know, when it first started. But Sean Barney Barron was a good friend of mine. Anthony Rufo, Josh Loya, there was the Acker brothers, just mainly guys from Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And, and then we would meet up with other professionals from other places in the world, and we got along good with the Hawaiians and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was just like a brotherhood. We're all kind of doing the same thing.
So as you're like, because I, you know, I had a similar life, you know, doing music. Well, I don't know. Maybe mine was a little more hardcore out the gate. But at first, you know, it's fun. You're hanging with the homies. I got my band guys. We're getting, you know, loaded after shows or rehearsal nights and stuff like that. But then it starts changing. It starts causing some problems. When does that start happening for you? You're crushing it. You're making money. You're traveling the world. You got your homies. Within that world of, like, the party and hanging with the chicks at the beach and all that, when did the bad stuff start happening?
Well, I think it's, you know, probably from, you know, when I got hurt in 2004. I mean, up from, you know, 99 to 2004, we were partying and drinking and doing coke and stuff like that on the weekends. And, like, it wasn't the mess thing at all for me.
Yeah.
And then, like, 2004, I got hurt at the Eddie Aikau in Hawaii, and I couldn't compete at Mavericks, and I was kind of injured, and I think I started doing more drugs, you know. I think I tried meth a couple times. I was like, whoa, that's so gnarly. And then really in, like, 2006 when I started really just, like, smoking meth every single day, and I just felt like I needed it, you know, and I was hiding from everyone, kind of my sponsors, and telling them, yeah, I'm surfing every day, and just kind of lying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like at that point it had a hold on me. And that's what scared me.
What was your injury?
I hurt my knee. Like, I took off on a wave and the wave kind of crunched me and hurt my front knee. And so I came back to California and just had to watch the Mavericks event, which I was hoping to, like, defend my title for a fourth title.
Mm. Did you win three in a row?
Yeah, I won three in a row.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was trying to defend the title, but I couldn't do it. So I just, you know, ended up just kind of partying a little bit. But from 2004 to 2006, I was kind of sampling, still surfing when I healed up and stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah. How did you now? So you're just kind of partying. You're not, you know, doing your passion, your work. You're injured, which that can be a bum out. That can really kill somebody's spirit. But yeah. So do you think that that's what made you break down enough to try meth?
No, I think it was just one of those things. Like, we're just partying one night and someone, like, had some and said, try this. And then I think at that point I was like, I wasn't scared to try it again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it just progressed to a point where I just was smoking it every single day, all day, in 2006. And basically just for 2 years, I was pretty much on meth all the time.
Mm.
And it wasn't like, meth wasn't something for me that was like, oh, let's smoke some meth and go surfing. Like, no, that was not it. It was like, let's try to avoid everybody.
Yeah.
And go look for driftwood at 4 a.m, you know, like, just stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And just stuff that you would never do normally, you know, and the reason why I'm saying that is because, you know, when I did get clean in 2008, basically I came back to my house in Santa Cruz after recovery. And I saw what I was doing at my house, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is so nuts," you know.
So you came back sober and saw the stuff you were doing when you were tweaking.
Oh, I saw the mess sober. Yeah, yeah. I came back to what I was doing when I was high, and I just was like, "Oh, I was blown away that I thought that these things were, like, okay." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what even makes me to this day go, "Wow!" Like. Nope, I don't want that anymore in my life. It just changes a person completely.
Yeah, stuff that wasn't, you know, okay becomes okay. There's a saying in some literature that says, like, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. You know, like, something that we would have been totally against before now becomes the norm, and we're like, what? That's what? So what? I collect driftwood. I'm building a house. I don't know why you're tripping.
I'm an artist. Yeah.
An artist. Totally. I can totally relate to that, man. Yeah, so let's throw in a song here. Now, I guess I was talking to Ernie, and what was the Marley song that you were requesting?
Well, it was actually Black Uhuru, What Is Life?
Black Uhuru, or I don't know how to say yeah. that. Yeah.
Me neither, but yeah. Yeah.
All right, what's that? Okay, we're going to do the Suicidal Tendencies.
Did I stump you right there or what?
No, I don't think that's entirely accurate. I think it came in and we thought it was a Bob Marley song. But that's all right. We're going to do the Suicidal Tendencies one first, okay. If that's okay. So, and this was like, that's funny that you picked the song. One of the first tours that my band Head PE ever got was with Suicidal Tendencies. And I was all tweaked out on that tour with those guys. So it's kind of bringing up some old memories for me. But why'd you select this song?
You know, it just gets me pumped. It just gets me psyched, you know what I mean? And it kind of, you can't bring me down. Just as like, just one of those lyrics that kind of lives with a lot of people. And it kind of motivates me a little bit, you know, like, you know, how hard life is. It's never too hard, you know what I mean?
I love it. Yeah, it's an anthem. So we're here on Rock to Recovery Radio. I am with Flea, a.k.a. Daryl Verasco, Big Wave Ripper, and this is Suicidal Tendencies. We'll be right back. Thank you.
promise. Before you go take a walk in my world, you better take a look at the real world. Cause this ain't no Mr. Rogers neighborhood. Can you stay feel like this? Yeah, maybe sometimes I do feel like this. I ain't happy about it, but I'd rather feel like this and be full of this. And if I offended you, oh, I'm sorry, but maybe you need to be offended. But here's my apology and one more thing. Please don't you dare bring me down. Bring me down.
God, that brings back so many amazing memories from my early touring days, and that stuff just gets you pumped up. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM. I'm your host, Wes Geer. This show's also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. They have some great treatment programs if you're looking to get help. We're on the phone right now with Daryl Verasco, who's also known as Flea, dominated Mavericks, winning it three times in a row. He's telling his story about, you know, making money as a pro surfer, surfing all over the world, having a good time, a little bit of partying. And then after getting injured at the Eddie Aikau contest, I think you said, hurt your knee, and then you were laid up, and next thing you know, you're smoking meth and all hung up on that. That's something I can relate to. I didn't hurt my knee, and I didn't surf giant waves like you, but I definitely had my time with that devil's dandruff, yeah, if you will, man. So, you know, I wanted to ask you too. You had an intervention, right? So this is what I was doing a little research on you, you know, and so you had talked about you stopped smoking meth, but what brought on the intervention? How was it going where the family did that?
Well, you know, basically, you know, a big part was, you know, when I was high on meth, I had gone to a beach up north, and I decided to, like, go up the cliff, and as I was going up this huge cliff, high on meth, I think I was bringing my dog back up to the car, because I had two dogs, and they got in a fight, and so I was bringing one up the cliff, and I passed out going up the cliff, and I was, like, 30 feet up.
What do you mean you passed out? That's not something you usually hear, like, with somebody on meth.
No, I was looking down at the rocks, like there was pebbles, and I was like, I remember, like, I got blurry. I was like, whoa, like, got, like, dizzy, you know?
Had you been drinking, or you were just up for a long time?
I was dehydrated. Mm. I was dehydrated, and I was been up for days,
yeah,
drinking and doing whatever, yeah, and I passed out, and I did a backflip off this cliff and basically broke my arm. Bone came out of my arm, compound fracture, hit my head. I had to get, you know, medevaced off the beach and sat in the hospital for 3 days, you know, like pretty much close to died, you know.
Wow.
And my girlfriend came and saw me, and finally when I got out of the hospital, I was at home, and I had a broken arm, and I was all hurt with stitches all over my head, and I just, like, didn't want to talk to anyone anymore, so I just left town, and I just basically started getting high again, and it's crazy how it has you, you know, and it had me so hard that even though I fell off a cliff, and I hurt myself, and I was broken, and I had stitches in my face, and my head, and my everywhere, I still went back to it.
Yeah,
You hear that a lot.
You hear that a lot. People go to the hospital for, you know, maybe they OD'd or something, and they'll rip the tubes out, they'll bail, and, like, it's like, I got to get high.
Yeah, I just was like, I couldn't surf, and it falls right back to when I got injured at the Eddie, you know. I was like, I'm sitting here, I got a broken arm, I can't surf, why not be high, you know? So that was, I think that was my whole mindset. And then, you know, I came back to town, and my dad had come to my house, and he was like, hey, I want you to, do you think you could talk to this guy about your drinking? And I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And ended up going with my dad, and we drove to Santa Cruz High School, and he was a teacher at Santa Cruz High. So he had a classroom, and when I walked in there, is all my peers, you know, Richard Schmidt, these couple people that I look up to, and a lot of my family members, and they're like, hey, you know, they care about me and they love me. And obviously I was upset, you know, because that's what happens when you get tricked. You feel like you're being tricked into something.
Got bamboozled.
So I just basically heard what they had to say, and it was about the Beacon House. They're like, hey, you can go to the Beacon House. And I was like, I just got mad, and I think I left. And then I was really trying to find a place to, like, be able to surf. If I was going to get clean, I wanted to be able to surf. Mm-hmm. That was my whole mindset. So I was, in the coming weeks, I was just basically, okay, I was calling some places. We were trying to find some places that actually I could surf if I was going to get clean. And then, you know, that was a failed attempt. So I said, okay, in 2 weeks, I'm going to go to the Beacon House.
What was the failed attempt? Was you trying to do it on your own?
Like trying to find places, and like, you know, I think my girlfriend was calling, and my mom, and different, you know, trying to find different places that actually you could surf. And it's just like, it wasn't happening.
Yeah.
So
a lot of people have that. Too, when they're gonna get help, like, I'll do it, but I gotta have this. You know, a lot of people do.
Yeah,
that. Yeah.
It's just one of those things. And then 2 weeks later, I go, okay, in 2 weeks, I'll go to the Beacon House. And then I just got a huge bag of meth and gallons of vodka, and I just pretty much tried to kill myself for 2 weeks.
And, are you being dramatic? Were you really trying to kill yourself? Or are you saying in essence of your actions?
No, I'm being dramatic. Yes, but I was basically just going, I was just smoking more and drinking more just because that was my last 2 weeks, you know? And in that 2 weeks, like when that day came, I was like, let's go. I'm driving down to the Beacon House.
So you drove just ripped out of your mind.
Yeah, my girlfriend drove a little bit. I drove, and we got there, and you know, it was crazy. I was trying to like smuggle weed and cigarettes in there, and they weren't having it, you know, and
Thank God.
Found everything. And that's just, it's funny to think back on what you think you could pull off.
Well, plus if you're like me, when I first tried, before I went to rehab, but where they taught me about addiction and, you know, not doing anything. But when I first thought about getting sober, I thought it was going to be okay for me, and my brother did too. He's like, yeah, just stay off the meth, don't mess with heroin or pills, and just, you know, smoke a little weed, that's cool, you can have a margarita once in a while. But for a guy like me, that's not okay. So I kind of get it, when, because I think a lot of people go to rehab and they think their problem is this one thing. Well, heroin's my problem, or, you know, wine is my problem. We focus on that drug of choice thing. So anything that isn't what we perceive as our drug of choice, we think the other stuff's okay. But for a lot of us guys like me, sounds like a guy like you, you realize, and you get taught, really, we learn, like, no, I'm not okay with anything.
Yeah, no, it's got to be everything. And you go in there for alcohol and meth, and then you're on the freeway and you're flipping someone off going, wait a minute, that's not right. It's something that's in your head. It's like, it changes a lot of different things. It's not just the drug use or the drinking. It's like being a better person and actually being kind to one another and like helping people and stuff like that. You know, it goes a lot further than just, your drug.
What was the key for you in when you were first, well, it says, by the way, that when you showed up, you had close to a 0.30 when you're walking in there. Alcohol.
Yeah, I know.
That's,
I was
pretty gnarly.
2-point-something range, and I told you I was drinking vodka, you know.
Well, plus
and,
when you're doing meth, you can drink a lot before you pass out. It's really...
Yeah, that was kind of... it was rarely a pass out, but...
Yeah.
It was definitely an edge cutter, for sure. So yeah, I... That was... Those were some tough days, those early days.
I get it. So in the early days, you go in there and it's, you know, you like we're talking about, you're okay, I need some help, but I'm going to bring my weed and stuff. What was the key stuff you learned in the beginning to that got you to the spot where you realized you couldn't have anything? Because some people might go to that treatment center and hear it and go, yeah, get out and maybe try some weed or controlled drinking, thinking that the meth was a problem. How did you get from thinking you could do some weed to, no, I can't have anything? What was the key?
Basically, it really was like pretty simple. I mean, learning about it was cool, and then I felt pretty good, you know, physically.
Mm-hmm.
I felt healthy again. I was eating pretty well at the Beacon House.
Yeah.
And then, it's basically one thing a guy said to me at a meeting that kind of made me think a lot differently. He said, like, are you done yet?
Mm.
You know, he just asked me, are you done yet? And I like looked at him and I was like, you know, yeah, I'm done, you know? And like from that point on, I just kind of like, I was just done with it, you know?
You embraced it in your head, huh?
And I feel like it's like anything I do it all the way. I feel like that was why I went so far in surfing.
Mm-hmm.
Just cause I put my head down and I do it, you know? And so it was no different from recovery, you know. I was like, I'm going to do this. And so it was a never look back situation. And I think I was really lucky too, because I have surfing, and it was like falling back in love with my first girlfriend in high school or something. You know, it's like I had that when I got out of rehab, and that's what a lot of people don't have. And that's what I'm trying to do with Fleahab, is introduce those things into their life again. So that they could have that and, you know, get back into that sport they used to love to do or whatever, you know, and feel like music is a great thing too. I mean, I think it's a wonderful thing you're doing at all the recoveries, you know?
Yeah, thanks. So, it's interesting that we share that. Yeah, it's our story's similar in that way. When I got to the point where I started doing heroin, which is only the last few months of my, you know, meth and heroin and all this stuff, part of me excited because I was like, man, so many great artists have done this, you know, but it was just a mess. It really ruined music for me. And then to what kind of like what I'm getting to is like with you and surfing and with me and music, at first I thought, oh, music can't be good without the way I was doing it before. Like I could imagine there might be a surfer out there who's like, man, it's not going to be cool to surf unless I'm stoned beforehand or whatever. But when you get totally sober, the connection with, I would imagine, surfing, and for me, the connection with the music is so much more intense when you're entirely sober, because it's just pure, and that it takes on a whole new beauty.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a better surfer now. I feel like I'm so more in tune with what I'm doing that, like, it's at a different level, you know, and no distractions whatsoever. When I go surfing, I'm focused on what I'm doing, and it's like, it's wonderful, you know?
I love hearing that. That's how I feel with music. I've never played better. And I wouldn't have thought that prior, that it would ever be that way.
Yeah.
That's totally cool, man. Yeah, I love it. So how long do you have sober now?
Actually, I've been sober for 10 years.
Yeah, we got about the same time. What's your date?
10 years and 7 days. August 25th.
August 25th of 08?
2008.
Ah, yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'm 12-10 of 07, so I'm like just 10 or whatever. I can't do the math. 10 months ahead of you. But I have 10 years also. That's cool.
Yeah, cool, man.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, and Beacon House, funny enough, that's how I connected with you there. We went to Branch Rock to Recovery Out. We've been doing Southern California. For those listening at home, Rock to Recovery is a music therapy program that we bring as an ancillary service to treatment centers all over Southern California. The first place we started doing it up in your area, in your hood, is Beacon House. And so that's really cool. It's an amazing program up there, beautiful old house. I think it was the first one of rehab of its kind, like way back in the day. So they've been around doing great work for a long time. That's really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me about this Fleahab that you started. And by the way, I asked somebody on Facebook if they had a question, and somebody said, how did he get the name Flea?
Basically, how I got the name Flea was I was small, and I think I hit puberty pretty late. So I was pretty small, and I was surfing big waves at Middle Peak in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And Vince Collier, one of my, you know, guys I looked up to, said, oh, look at Flea. He looks like a flea on a wave. And then, you know, it stuck, and I didn't like it at first, obviously.
Yeah.
And it, so it stuck even harder, you know.
When they know it bugs you, they just keep pounding it, huh?
Yeah, they especially in Santa Cruz, we're known for nicknames, and if you don't like your nickname, it's getting pounded in. So
yeah,
it's all good. I like it now. You know, it's fine.
You're in good company. And, Flea, the bass player, is just a monster icon, so that's cool.
Yeah,
it's the only other Flea I know.
Yeah, I know. He was supposed to give me a guitar. I gave him a surfboard, and he's supposed to give him a guitar, but he never did.
He knows. What's up, Flea? I know he's listening right now. Yo, Flea. Yo, homie. Yo, homie.
Yeah, where's the guitar?
Where's the bass, dude?
Yeah, so anyways, you know, the Flea Hab is basically when I got out of rehab, I was like, I know people are trying to find places that they can actually get back into sports and surfing and exercise if they're going to be doing this. And so I started a nonprofit called Flea Hab. And, it's basically focused around exercise and healthy living. And just basically, it's a sober living environment here in Santa Cruz that I try to get people to get out in the water and get them back into things they love to do, golfing, whatever it is. You know, to try to, we have boards at the house, we have golf clubs, we have bikes, and we got a little room to work out. And, you know, I try to go over there a couple times a week and get them out of the house and go do stuff with them. And it's really helped a lot of people so far. You know, everyone that's come is a lot of surfers come because they're like, this sounds insane. This is exactly what I need. So it's really cool in that aspect of things. And it's fun for me to be able to help other people, you know, and knowing that how much it's helped me, it's like, why wouldn't I want to do that? So it's been fun.
Best feeling in the world, isn't it?
Yeah. And then, you know, also the Beacon House in Monterey, like, you know, they saved my life basically. And then they contacted me a couple of years ago and they're like, hey, will you bring the clients surfing? We, you know, come down here and bring them surfing. And I said, yeah. And now we've been doing this program for over 2 years now. You know, and they keep adding new exercises and stuff for me. So it's been fun working at the Beacon House with clients that, you know, because it's such a special place for me too. So, you know, they saw what I was doing at Flea Hab and they're like, this sounds like we should have some of this here. And so it's really cool that they're kind of opening up their mind a little bit to new things, you know, after years and years of doing the same thing, you know?
Totally. So. I think that whole world of rehabilitation has really opened up, you know, especially recently. And you know what? What's funny is for a lot of us, we come into addiction. The weird lie that it definitely my head told me that I feel like everybody's head tells them is you can't imagine life without your drug or your drinking. Like my life's going to be over now. And especially when we add these elements like Rock Recovery, we get people to play music who've never played music. And I'm sure you're getting people to surf who probably would never even paddle out or even try it and do all these things, golf. And then you start cultivating this magic energy of spirit and you're going in, breaking down walls and boundaries that you never thought you would. And suddenly you realize how much bigger and more amazing and more rad a sober life of recovery can be than sitting in your house collecting driftwood or like me, you know, playing the same guitar lick for 15 hours in a row.
Yeah. No, it's opened my eyes to how good life is. And, you know, now I have two beautiful children. I'm lucky enough that my beautiful wife, Onawa, she's stuck by my side. She was the one that brought me to the Beacon House, you know, 10 years ago. And now we have beautiful children together. I'm surfing. I'm doing what I love is helping other people. Life just gets better if you just, you know, cut a couple things out, you know, and, you know, just go to bed a little earlier.
Totally. I think both, you know, I'll probably be asleep pretty quickly after this show's over. So
yeah, maybe we'll watch a couple little Netflix or something. You never know.
You never know. Get all crazy. Yeah. So tell me, do you have plans to paddle out on any big Mavericks days coming up?
You know, I've kind of retired from surfing out there, mm-hmm. just because my children mean more to me than my ego, and it's just so crowded, you know, these days. Mm. So I basically just surf for fun and around Santa Cruz, and I don't surf life-threatening waves like that anymore, just because I want to just enjoy my life and try to salvage this body of mine, what I have left of it. And, you know, it's just been fun just surfing and not having to prove anything or that was kind of the whole thing with pro surfing is like, you had to do this, you had to do that, you got to get this, you got to do that. And it's like, now it's just purely love for me. And I love it the most.
That's so cool. There's so many parallels. I really enjoy it. It's like, that's the same thing I went through with music. Like, I remember leaving my first band that had a record deal. My drummer would say, hey, let's jam. And I'd be like, why jam? And if we're not going to write a record and go tour, if there's not a point to it, I don't want to do it. And now in recovery, you know, I just got done jamming with the Rock to Recovery guys, and we're playing covers. And I'm so happy. I don't care. I don't care about a record deal. It's funny. When you're fulfilled in your soul, everything you do becomes more fulfilling.
Yeah. Yep.
That's cool. So let's throw in a little bit of the song. We got it all going on. I don't know if I say this right. I say it Black Uhuru. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Right? Does anybody know? So Black Uhuru, this is your song, What is Life? What made you pick this?
You know, it's just a kind of like, what is, it's a big question, you know what I mean? What is life? And basically, what is life? It means like, what are you going to make of life? Mm. What is it to you, you know, and what is it worth? So, I mean, it's just like, it means different, I think, to everybody, just sure. Because it's, you know, it gets them thinking.
Right. And if you're dark and loaded, what is life would have a whole probably dark meaning. And then, When you're in a good spot.
Yeah, you see kids thriving now, and before you'd see a big packet.
A packet, yeah, totally. So we'll bring you back and close it out. But this is Wes Gear. I'm your host on Rock to Recovery Radio. We're here with Big Wave Ripper and Fleahab founder Daryl Verasco. And we're going to play a little reggae for you. This is, we think, it's called Black Uhuru, What is Life?
No one can tell.
Yeah. Black Uhuru, What is Life? This is Wes Geer on Rock to Recovery Radio. Thanks for tuning in with us. This is KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, bringing you this show along with New Vista Behavioral Health. Great treatment programs. I'm on the line here with my first ever pro surfer interview, which has been super sick and rad for me to get to do this with Daryl Verasco, a.k.a. Flea, three-time Mavericks winner, champion. He's also a sober dude. We got about the same time sober, 10 years. He started Fleahab. He got out of addiction and meth and the alcohol and started Fleahab, and he's been bringing the light to people by sharing activities, taking people surfing, getting people in their bodies and out of the drug mess. So, Flea, stoked that you came on. Been really cool to talk to you. I feel like the luckiest guy in the world because I get to connect with rad humans like you and just get into an hour conversation about, you know, cool stuff, life.
Yeah, man, it's been fun. It's nice to talk to you, and glad I could be here doing these things and kind of bringing awareness to such a big problem here in the United States and the world, really. So
what would you say, you know, and this could go to anybody, but since you're a surfer, let's make it to a surfer. What would you say I actually have somebody in my family, he's loves surfing, but, you know, the culture, everybody loves to smoke weed and drink, and how do you surf and you know, stay sober and have a good life?
Yeah, you just basically just get up, and if you have a window, you go surf and enjoy every moment of it, you know. And it doesn't have to be about getting high and hanging out at the lane at your local beach and drinking beers after you surf and stuff, you know. It's like get in, get out, have fun. You know, that's what it's all about for me, and I think it can be for anyone just in their sports, you know. It's like you have your window in life, and you have to fit your little things in, you know. Everyone has a busy life, but it's really important that we take time out to, you know, give some time to our body on a daily basis, you know. And that's key to recovery, I think, is just getting that body tired and making it work.
I totally agree. And I like what you said. You get in and get out. Like, I used to, you know, go see a band, but instead of staying there all night getting wasted, I go see the band and I bounce. So, yeah, if you're a surfer and you're not trying to get all loaded, go, you know, catch some waves, bounce on with your day.
Exactly. You feel so much better. So, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's so cool, man. Well, hey, thanks for being a light worker. Thanks for making it out the other side and helping and giving back like you do. We're doing our Rock to Recovery show down here on the 15th, Saturday the 15th. You're obviously welcome to come join us. We're going to honor Moby and have my boy Tommy Vex play and Steel Panther, and my Rock to Recovery boys are going to play. I consider you a homie, so if we're ever in each other's area, we definitely got to link up. And thanks so much for staying up late with me and coming on the show.
Yeah, no worries. And if anyone out there wants to check out Fleahab, it's at fleahab.org. And if you're in the Santa Cruz area, October 20th, we're going to have a dinner, sunset dinner fundraiser. So if you feel like supporting something like that, come on out. Thank you.
That's cool. So it's Fleahab, F-L-E-A. HAB.org. You can find out more about the rad work that Flea does, and support.org means it's a nonprofit. So, killer, dude. Well, thanks again, man. Sending you big love,
homie. Take care, you guys.
You too, dude. This is Wes Geer. This has been Rock to Recovery Radio with my man Daryl Flea Verasco, and if you're out there and you're struggling, I hope you hear the message that there is a way out and life can be absolutely amazing on the other side of recovery. Just ask for help. There's tons of people out there that want to help you out. So thanks for tuning in, and we're out.